Hello and welcome to the M&A Zing, the weekly podcast for acquisition entrepreneurs, search funders and holdco builders across the UK, Europe and beyond. Today, I am absolutely privileged to be diving into the early stages of the ETA self-funded holdco building journey of Nadim Kapadia, the managing partner at Aligned Partners. Nadim has building this holdco, which he's launched in early 2025 to pursue a medium to long-term buy and build strategy via a self-funded search. Now, Nadim has a very distinguished history of having worked in advisory roles, serving a number of illustrious FTSE 100 businesses such as HSBC, Lloyds Banking Group, NatWest, Aviva, BP. He has worked all around the world, covering geographies far and wide, particularly with the time spent in Singapore. And he has been helping more recently SMEs with their digital transformations, using his unique background that spans diplomacy, public policy, sustainability, consulting, and venture capital. And we're going to be focusing today on his decision to pursue holdco building through the self-funded search model. So, Nadim, delighted to have you with us. Thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Garrett, and excited to be on the pod.
So let's get straight into the matter at hand, Nadim. You have entered this self-funded search world in the last 12 months, and this is on the back of a diverse international career where you were working in diplomacy in Singapore, working in public policy, working in advising all these illustrious FTSE 100 companies. But what was the driving force that caused you to decide, actually, entrepreneurship for acquisition is for me?
Yeah, it's a great question. Well, I was always looking for something that gave me a bit more autonomy, a little bit more control over what I was doing. I'm very privileged to have had the opportunity to have roles across public policy, diplomacy, and consulting. But I was always looking for something that would give me a little bit more control and autonomy. And I thought started learning more about entrepreneurship through acquisition, really during business school time. Mm-hmm. I had a few friends who were launching their own search funds, and it got me thinking about the model, but I never quite pursued it. But it was always at the back of my mind, and something that, you know, I would spend some time whenever I had free time reading about, learning on. And towards the end of last year, I was quite keen to make a shift, explore something different. And I thought this was something that combined a lot of what I'd done in the past, but also gave me what I was looking for, and therefore decided to plunge in and go into the world of ETA.
And so you studied an MBA at Cambridge, Judge?
At London Business School.
London Business School, right. So yeah, the other haunt of the OG of this world, Simon Webster. What did you pursue the elective during that course, the ETA elective?
No, unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to do Simon's elective. I know it's very popular, but I had a number of friends who were actually launching their search fund while at the MBA itself. And that was the first time I was really introduced to the term search fund. And, you know, it was interesting speaking to them, understanding how they were going about pursuing it. I spent a lot of time during my MBA actually in the venture capital and private equity space, which has close connections to the search fund model. But that was a great opportunity for opening my mind up in terms of the opportunity, the challenges, the problem statement. And so while I went on to pursue a career in consulting after the MBA, it was something that I was always quite keen on, and I'm very glad that I've had the opportunity now to plunge into this world of ETA.
Was there an element of FOMO at play there, where you didn't take the elective, but others around you who did were launching their search funds, where you're a little bit like, well, what's all this about? I feel like I've missed the opportunity, so I'm going to get stuck in.
Not really, actually. I never was considering this as a pathway. I was just interested in really learning. I think the beauty about business school is that you get the opportunity to really explore. And for me, coming from a background where I had spent a large part of my career in diplomacy and public policy, the MBA was really the platform for me to explore and to learn different pathways, careers, opportunities that people were pursuing. And so I think it was just really the opportunity to start thinking about it a little bit more seriously, understanding how people were going ahead in pursuing careers in the ETA world.
Hmm. if we just go back into your career journey, a lot of those roles were high impact roles, both commercially and sort of societally, I guess. Is there a particular kind of progenitor that comes from that, which led you to want to go into ETA, where you felt perhaps that you could have more impact than perhaps if you went down the venture capital route or continued on the consulting path?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think there were a few considerations at mind when I was thinking about this. I think the first one was generally around impact. I've been quite fortunate to have been in roles where there was an impact, whether it was public policy or whether it was consulting in the sustainability space. And so I was quite keen in whichever pathway I pursued, there would be some form of an impact, whether it's on people's lives, whether it's on the economy. And so that was something that that was at the back of my mind. So that was one idea that I was thinking about. I think the second one was generally in terms of the idea of, I spent a lot of time looking at entrepreneurship. I've worked in a startup. I have mentored and advised a number of startups, and it's always been very fun. I enjoy the adrenaline that comes in working in the startup environment, but I knew within myself that I was not the person to take something from zero to one. I know there are many talented people who can take something from an idea and really develop it and bring it up, but I knew that was not me, and I knew my capabilities were really in taking something that was running and bringing it to its next level, coming in, looking at opportunities to streamline, opportunities for growth. And that's why I never saw myself going down the pathway of starting a startup. And therefore, I think the ETA model, which combines entrepreneurship with the idea of investing, but also taking something that's running and building on that, was something that appealed to me, and I felt struck with some of the skill sets that I think I could bring on the table, and that's how I landed on this pathway.
And you've opted to go on that pathway through hard mode because you've done the non-partnered self-funded search route, which is great. Congratulations. Could you elaborate on why you've chosen that particular route versus the sort of traditional Stanford model or others?
Yes. So obviously kind of going down this pathway, there are a number of different ways you can pursue. And I was familiar with the traditional search fund model, which typically results in a searcher going out, spending 6 to 8 months, sometimes more, sometimes less, raising capital from a number of different investors, and then beginning the search phase. Mm-hmm. I was looking at more autonomy, a little bit more flexibility and space in terms of the end acquisition. And so I felt that going down the self-funded pathway, A, would give me a little bit more of that autonomy, but also at the end of the day, a little bit more control, because it would mean that that would translate to higher equity on the final acquisition target. And that was something that was quite important for me. So that was one element that was quite critical. I think if you look at the traditional search fund model, and if you speak to many people who have taken that pathway, one of the big benefits is having on your cap table a number of experienced investors and advisors who can support you, as well as going down with credibility when it comes to looking at potential targets, speaking to business owners. And so I think that's one of the parts that I'm quite mindful of that I do not have as a self-funded searcher. And I think this is where leaning in on my network, on people who I know who are business owners, who are owner operators in the sectors that I'm looking at, or who have relevant experience, are quite critical. And I think I have been able to cover for some of that advisory support that you may get in a traditional search fund through this current model, just by leaning in on my network. And I think the part of me, the training as a diplomat, perhaps played a role in terms of just networking, speaking to different people and trying to bring them on board to support you on this journey.
Yeah. So you felt that you could be more particular about where you found some potential capital or smart money or knowledge and experience to join you on this journey, rather than necessarily having to go the sort of traditional route of the number of players that fund that space. Interesting. How has it affected, though, your sort of search criteria, being a self-funded searcher, and maybe your search timeline? Because we hear all this about, like, you know, traditional searchers are taking 2 years to find a target, but they're often, like, you know, quite material sized businesses because they're bringing a lot of external capital from their backers to take these deals down. Self-funded searchers tend to have a sort of slightly lower ceiling and often a more accelerated time frame. Have you found that that's affected your thesis?
Yes, I think so. So I think compared to maybe some of the focus areas for traditional search funds, I would say as a self-funded searcher, it would be slightly lower in terms of the EBITDA values that I'm looking at in companies or the total revenue. But I think there's still a sense over here of, I actually initially started out my search taking a somewhat agnostic view, but I pivoted quite quickly actually into a few priority areas that I'm currently looking at. So for example, I'm currently very much focused on the healthcare space, yep, as well as the early years education space. And so I've pivoted and focused on those areas. I think in terms of timeline, there's always, I think as a self-funded search, you are taking a significant risk upfront, sure, in funding yourself through the search process. And I think that's something that I'm quite mindful of. And so it's just given me a lot more urgency to work efficiently and effectively. And I think, Garrett, you have mentioned this many a time. You don't really need 2 years sometimes. It can be done on a shorter space. Again, I'm still very early in my journey, and I know that there would be occasions where certain deals may fall through, and these are things that you can't control. But I think it's just given me the urgency to try to work efficiently and effectively in reaching the end goal.
Yeah, it's quite galvanizing, isn't it? The self-funded search path. Mm-hmm. That actually, you know, you need to, and congratulations on focusing your search around those verticals you mentioned there with healthcare and child services. But it also focuses your mind around looking for motivated sellers, looking for executable deal structures, sensible valuations. You know, these things that you know that if they're not aligned to your fund name, that actually they will become obstacles and will just delay your search. That risk you mentioned there of deals falling apart for reasons beyond your control, absolutely. But there are also some preemptions that you can do that actually mitigates the risk of some of those things by looking specifically for businesses that are super motivated to exit, and trying to come up with a deal helps to have some cash, obviously, and not try and do these things heavily leveraged or with a high level of risk for the seller. But if you can find motivated seller, you know, properly prepared to exit and come up with the right deal structure, which is mutually rewarding, actually you can get deals done at a reasonable pace.
I agree. One of my big takeaways during my time as a diplomat, and I started my career as a diplomat, was the importance of achieving win-win outcomes when you're out on an international negotiation and you're speaking to counterparts. It's really about trying to understand what the person on the other side of the table is looking for and how can you find an outcome that's a win-win outcome for both sides. And I think that's something that I've brought into the search phase when I'm speaking with business owners, I'm speaking to individuals looking at transition. It's really about trying to put myself into the shoes of the other party and trying to understand what are they looking for. And you know, one of the things I found is oftentimes not just financial, they would have an idea of what they may want for the business, but beyond that, there are other non-financial considerations that many business owners would like to ensure is protected post-acquisition, the legacy, their staff, their name, what they have built. And so I think trying to understand that and achieve win-win outcomes is very critical. And I think that was the motivation behind the name Aligned. I was thinking of what I would call the holding company. And I felt that, you know, the way I work is really about trying to drive win-win outcomes. And therefore, having that alignment, having that understanding that this is what I'm going after, this is what you are going after, is there a way in which we can achieve an alignment and achieve something that's fair on both sides? Yeah. And I think if you can do that, you can hopefully find success in this.
You can hopefully get a deal done relatively expeditiously. Yeah, I agree. And thinking about what the other party requires rather than necessarily going in at odds is always going to be more efficient and effective, one would hope. So you have taken the leap, you've established your vehicle, you are busily in the sort of sourcing phase right now and having some early conversations with some potential sellers, which is great. What kind of practical steps have you had to take to get this far? Maybe for the uninitiated who haven't considered going the self-funded route, what have you had to do in terms of incorporation or like setting up various bits of collateral to kind of get your messaging out there? What have you done for sourcing? Like, walk us through the journey to here.
Yep. So I think before going on the journey, I actually spent a lot of time actually consuming a lot of material. There's a lot of good resources, whether it's books, podcasts, interviews on YouTube. Yeah, there's a lot of information as well as speaking to individuals. And so I spent a good part of last year actually really consuming a lot of the information and really helping to crystallize and develop that thesis before taking the leap. So that would be one of the first steps, I would say. And then kind of on this journey, really just getting the basics, so getting the company set up, having your thesis, having some of the templates already. So I think all of those hygiene factors are already in place. So that would be step one. I think step two for me was really about assembling the deal team. Who are you going to be working with? Who are accountants that you can work with who have experience in M&A? Who are the relevant solicitors? Who are the relevant lenders, financiers, brokers that you can be working with to be able to help you move with speed and pace as and when you find a target? And so,
and hopefully predictable cost.
At predictable cost, exactly. And so I think having a lot of those upfront conversations and understanding that and realizing that, you know, there's a good working relationship, I can work with this individual or this company and we can move forward, was quite critical. And so I think assembling that deal team was quite important for me after kind of the basics. And then it's just about developing the process. I think someone mentioned to me, partly in just that you're not going to acquire if you don't inquire. And so you're just going to have to constantly start building that deal pipeline. And I think it's a little bit patchy at the start. You're trying to get the machine to work, so to speak, the engine to work. And so you're reaching out, but you don't really have that process. But it's really about trying to develop a good process for deal pipeline so that you're getting these opportunities coming through. And then as the opportunities are coming through, you are spending time on evaluating these opportunities as well as speaking with the businesses.
And that's a multi-channel approach to driving those conversations, like creating those opportunities. Are you doing broker-led on market as well as proprietary? Are you networking out there? Are you looking for referrals? You know, what are your current sourcing strategies?
Yep, so I would say it's very much a multi-prong approach. One part of it is looking at brokered deals. I think you would see a large part of the M&A transactions in the UK tend to be brokered, especially in the areas that I am looking at.
Why do you think that is?
I think one of the reasons is because you have a number of brokers. You have already a qualified deal on the table. So you have individuals who are interested in selling companies. And so I think when you can reach an alignment, things can move faster and quicker. So that could be one reason. There's a large number of different business brokers. But also I think the approach of proprietary takes a lot more time and effort. And so I think I've spoken to a number of searchers who do not have that luxury of time to be able to go down the proprietary route and therefore focus a lot more on the brokered side. But for me, I've tried to have a bit more of a multi-pronged approach. So there is an element of opportunities coming from brokered searchers. And we can talk about, you know, there are different types of business brokers, and it's about trying to build relationships with relevant business brokers that are working within the priority sectors that you might be looking at.
Without naming, have you found it easier to create those relationships with certain types of brokers, like, you know, independent or group or, you know, international franchised brokerages?
I've actually found a lot more success in working with some of the smaller independent brokers. So they may not be having a large number of deal flows. Maybe they may have several deals in a month, but these are high quality deals.
And they'll take the time to actually understand you.
They will. They'll take the time to understand. And I think they are also quite good in helping sellers understand where the market is. many deals are up on sites, but selling at quite unrealistic prices. Yeah. And so I think having a good business broker can add significant value, the right business broker. And so I think identifying who might be the right business brokers for the areas you're searching and looking at can be quite beneficial. And so that has been one approach that I've taken. I've also gone down the proprietary or off market route. It requires a little bit more effort, and it's something I'm still kind of fine tuning and trying to improve on. And I've done that through a number of different ways. So one of it is through direct mail, sending letters out. And in fact, just got a call from a business owner yesterday from a batch of letters that I sent out earlier this week. It's always nice to kind of get responses from some of the letters that you
get. Great validation. It proves that your message resonates.
Exactly. And I've also been doing email campaigns thanks to BizCrunch. Through the platform at BizCrunch, it's been a very seamless process to be able to send out email campaigns from a short list of different businesses on the platform. So that has been very helpful. And I've also been spending time trying to attend relevant industry events, networking events. To give an example, I'm looking at the healthcare space, and over the course of the last few weeks, I've attended a number of different industry events, and through that, I've had the opportunity of meeting a number of business owners. And while many of them may not be looking to sell their businesses, you know, I think having conversations with them, understanding what they're seeing in the market, has been quite helpful in strengthening my thesis, helping me to understand where the pain points are. And sometimes they're quite helpful in directing me to other people that I can speak to. And so those have been the main ways in which I have been sourcing. I've actually also been working with a buy-side advisor on a no-win, no-fee basis, which I think works quite well from that perspective. And through that, you know, there's been several good conversations that I've had with some target companies.
And are they actively going out and doing proprietary search on your behalf?
Or? They are. So the criteria and what I mentioned to them is that I don't want any brokered deals coming through. So they have developed a platform using AI and some other tools to be able to source relevant proprietary deals. And through that, you know, they have been able to pass through a few, and I've had a few interesting conversations so far.
Fantastic. Good. So the pipeline is gradually filling. You've got a multifaceted way of, you know, filling the hopper. And it's good to know that you're having some good conversations. As you'll probably attest, the conversations are to sow the seeds of trust. You know, the people don't just suddenly go, yeah, hey, come buy my company. You know, there needs to be this sort of dance of the seven veils that goes on, isn't there, really? That means that you are following a path for maybe 3 to 6 months of keeping in contact and spending more time with these sellers to try and get to a point where you can, you know, find an alignment. I keep coming back to that word, Nadeem. It's obviously inspired by your choice. Just for the benefit of the listeners, just give us a steer as to whether you are looking for permanent ownership of the companies or companies that you'll end up buying. This is a buy and build type strategy, is it, where you would want to hold these companies for a substantial period of time? Or are you looking to do a flip and, you know, play the valuation arbitrage game?
Yeah, it's definitely the former in terms of holding these companies for a longer period of time. And I think that's something that I make quite clear in my conversations with business owners, that I'm not here for a 5-year exit plan. The intention really is to come in and to hold these companies for the foreseeable future. There's value in holding these companies and taking them to the next level. And so that's really the strategy over here in terms of holding these companies for the foreseeable future and doing a bit of a buy and build strategy and identifying synergistic businesses that could come on board and take it from there.
Great. You've mentioned already the verticals that you're looking at, but tell us a little about the qualitative aspects of the kind of companies that you're looking for within those verticals. I mean, beyond, we could talk about the financials and the kind of expectations on EBITDA and maybe revenue thresholds, but beyond that, what are you looking for in the wiring of these businesses?
Yes, so let me take the healthcare space, and within the healthcare space, I've been looking at care homes, which are care homes as well as your home care, or your domiciliary care. And in terms of what I'm looking at, in these companies, you have the financial elements. But beyond the financial elements, I think a large part of these businesses is around staffing, and so understanding what the culture of that company is quite important. And I'm someone, I've always valued the importance of culture and trying to understand, is it a nurturing, is it a supportive culture? Do employees feel that they are taken care of within the organization? So that will be a qualitative aspect that I would look out or try to understand. Also understanding the management and management style. For many of these businesses, one of the key individuals is the registered manager that plays a very critical role on an operational day-to-day level. Having the right qualifications, having the right skill sets, and having the right passion, I think is very important. And so I think having those conversations and understanding the culture, understanding the qualifications of the management team that would be running the business is quite critical, as well as understanding what kind of relationship that business has with the local council, because a lot of the home care businesses are on contracts with the local government. Sure. And so understanding, looking at the CQC reports and understanding, you know, what the feedback has been from these reports, and have they been performing a good job in providing that service to the end users. So those are some of the elements that I would look out for in such targets.
And that's pretty deep due diligence before really getting to kind of heads of terms or anything like that with these folks. If you're identifying the candidates and then you're doing a lot of that additional sector-specific desk research, that is quite a commitment of time more than anything.
Yes, it is. And I think going back to the point on culture, it's one of those things where you will never be able to get a full grasp until you acquire a business. And even in the search phase, you have mainly your interactions with the business owner. But I think through technology and just going online, looking at reviews, looking at what employees are saying, looking at what end users are saying, what kind of reviews are coming through, I think that's quite helpful, specifically within the care space, as well as in the early years education. You have both your CQC reports as well as your Ofsted reports in the education space. And I think these reports are very thorough. They are done by people who have a lot of experience within the sector, and you can have a good sense of the business just by looking through and understanding those reports.
So talk me through, if you don't mind, obviously we're still in year zero of Align Partners, but you're obviously a very quick study and you're deeply researching the space that you're in, which is, you know, excellent, will set you up very well. But talk me through, if you can, any of the sort of profound learnings that you've had so far or any surprises that you've found in your search journey to date.
Well, I think I was just speaking with a friend the other day, and I was surprised that I'm just learning so much every day on this journey, because there are so many things you'll need to understand from the financial perspective, from the non-financial perspective, from the relationship building perspective, from understanding the sector. And so I think one of the things that I've reminded myself is just to have that curious mindset, just to constantly ask questions, and you'll never be able to try to get a full developed thesis before going in, but just learning along the way, it's something that's quite critical. And so that's something that I have found on this journey, just constantly learning along the way, and just growing a thick skin, because I think this journey can be challenging. You're going to face and hear a lot more no's before you get that yes. But I always tell myself that every no is one step closer towards a yes. Mm. And so just persevering along the way and playing that long game. One of the things that I do outside of work is I do long distance running and marathon running. And that has taught me a lot of qualities that I have brought back to my professional life. And one of the key things is just having the long game in mind, that you're working towards that target and you're going to go and experience bumps along the way, but have that resilience, have that perseverance, and you will get there.
That endurance mindset actually is a great quality for the searcher, for acquisition entrepreneurs, because, you know, you do have to try and think. It's patient capital. It's you know, the long game that you are building for here. So having that discipline and that determination that spans, you know, potentially a decade with a you know, a view towards the end game, end goal. Mm-hmm. That is, you know, a real key differentiator, I think, a prerequisite for successful search. So, yeah, marathon running, I see a lot of correlation with people that put themselves through that pain voluntarily.
I remember when I started off on this journey, I took a sticky note on my table and I wrote the words, make progress every day. And I stuck it just on my table. And that's what I remind myself. There would be days where I may feel I've not made much progress, and there may be days where I have achieved a lot. But what I tell myself is every day, as long as I'm making small incremental steps, speaking to a few new people, learning something new, having a few more deals come through the pipeline, you are moving closer towards your end goal. And I think just reminding myself that making those small incremental steps forward is going to count for something later down the line.
Oh yeah, 100%. I mean, it is a game of numbers. It is also a persistence, an endurance game, but also it's a constant learning experience, as you've rightly identified, because with every opportunity you learn something new and you are applying some of the learnings for the next one. And it's a process of refinement, isn't it? Absolutely. Arguably. And what you tend to find is some deals that maybe, you know, weren't ready when you first started talking to them come around again.
Yes.
And you're in a better position to take advantage of them at that point, or take advantage of the opportunity, not the seller. So, the mindset for the marathon, I think, is quite a key learning here, a takeaway for me. You've, in our pre-call, kind of summarized that as staying consistent, persistent, and disciplined. Can you speak to any examples of where that, you know, you've really had to kind of dig into the reserves and pull out that kind of tenacity? Are there any occasions where, you know, perhaps it's felt like a steep mountain?
Yes, I think while I'm still early on this search phase, I have put out a number of different offers. A few deals have fallen through the cracks, and I think it's always difficult when you see a potential deal and you think, you know, maybe this might work, and you're working hard towards it, and for some reason it doesn't materialize. Maybe your offer isn't accepted, or you get past the offer stage and there's some discussions and someone else comes in and it doesn't quite work out. So I think it's always challenging to accept that, you know, something that you think is progressing quite nicely, actually, you suddenly hit a roadblock. And I think it's really on those occasions where you just have to take a step back and say, this is just part of that process. Every no, as I said, is going to get you closer towards that.
Yeah,
yes.
It can be a more expensive no the further down the deal process you've gone.
Yes.
Were any of these offers agreed, like in principle?
There were one or two that were agreed in principle, and then
so why do they fall out of bed? Was it due diligence or seller mindset change?
I would put it down to seller mindset change. So you do get that sometimes, and so that, again, that has taught me the importance of trying to achieve that alignment up front. I think if you can be honest, transparent as much as you can be at that point, to be able to ensure that both sides are on the same page, I think that counts for a lot.
Yeah, difficult to screen for that, isn't it? You could think everything's going hunky-dory, and that you are both aligned because you want the acquisition and they want the exit.
Yeah.
But, you know, what we have to remind ourselves of is that this is often the life's work of these individuals, and it's difficult, you know, really at the 11th hour for them to sometimes imagine a life without that presence.
Yes. And I think just going back to the point we were discussing earlier in terms of putting yourself in the shoes of the seller, it's easy for you coming in as an acquisitional entrepreneur and looking to acquire a business. But for that business owner, and I was just speaking to a business owner yesterday, they have spent 30, 40, sometimes 50 years working tirelessly in building their business to where it is. And this is probably the first time they are putting their business out there for sale. They are looking at a transition. And so it can be quite a difficult pill to swallow. Some of them may not have kind of really digested the whole process. And so I think really trying to be mindful and understanding that sometimes it may require quite a lot of conversations in order to kind of achieve an outcome, arrive at a state where they are ready to actually move forward.
Yeah, I think that's where a lot of the sort of sell side preparation services work quite well, is, you know, being on that journey with the seller.
Yes.
Helping them come to terms.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost, sometimes it's like postpartum depression or, you know, like a sense of loss of purpose.
And I think that's where that difference is between the brokered deals and the proprietary deals, because you find many a time with the brokered deals, there's already had that conversation has already taken place with the broker, with the seller, and it could have taken place over a course of a long period of time. I was just looking at the deal the other day as well, and the broker told me that he had been speaking with the seller for the past 3 years. Yeah. And she was fluctuating and eventually then decided to put the business on the market. So there is that level of qualification that has already taken place, whereas with the proprietary deals...
Shouldering that burden, I think.
Exactly. And so then the recognition that could take a slightly longer process because it's a little bit more that you need to go through with the seller to get them to be in a position where they are ready to move forward.
Yeah, I completely agree. I've seen very many examples of those from both sides of the table. So let's look ahead. Let's assume that everything continues to go up and to the right for you in terms of numbers of deal opportunities and willingness of sellers to sign those SPAs. Where would you like to be in 12 months' time if we're going to check in with you in mid-2026? Where would you hope to have gotten to by then?
Well, I really hope if we're checking in a years from now, that I would be able to share my experiences as a new acquisitional entrepreneur and what operating is like in the early phases. So that would be the plan, as well as talking through, you know, the potential pipeline for future and potential acquisitions.
Love it. Yes. Well, you're going to be very busy in the operational sense, but I hope that you still be able to spare time for value creation through further add-on acquisitions. So Nadeem, what kind of listeners or stakeholders would you hope to connect with as a consequence of doing this podcast? Are you looking to speak to any capital partners for acquisition capital, or are you quite comfortable on that front? Are you looking obviously to speak with owners of businesses, but are there any other kind of stakeholders that you'd hope to resonate with from this?
Yeah, I'm always open to having conversations with a wide variety of stakeholders. So people who are on this journey and would like to discuss specifically around the healthcare as well as the early years education space, very happy to share notes, very happy to engage and discuss on that with capital allocators, investors, always happy to have that discussion and see if you know there are areas for discussion or collaboration, as well as with business owners who are looking at, you know, potential transitions. It's always helpful to have those conversations. But I always find that I learn so much from these conversations, and it enjoy speaking to different people from different perspectives and kind of taking that on board.
That's part of the journey. That's part of the joy of the journey, frankly. And where geographically are you searching? Obviously, it's all UK, but you're based in the home counties. So where would you?
So I'm based in Watford. And so in terms of the geographical focus, what I've told myself, at least for now, is anything within a 2-hour drive from where I am, just so that, you know, it makes sense being physically present while also kind of working in that remote sense. So that's the kind of geographical focus I've put on myself for now.
Fabulous. Okay, great. And what might folks contact you and connect with you to have a discussion about what you're up to there?
Yep, I think LinkedIn would be a great place to reach out. Feel free to DM me on LinkedIn. You know, I'm quite fast to respond on LinkedIn, as well as maybe dropping a note on our website, alliantpartners.co.uk. You can drop a note there and we'll respond from there as well.
Excellent, great. Any final parting messages you'd like the listeners to have as regards, you know, their search journey in general, or, you know, the journey to exit for business owners? Anything that you'd like to impart before we wrap up?
I think for aspiring searchers or people on the ETA journey, I think I'm out on that journey itself. It's a highly fulfilling journey. I have absolutely no regrets since I started. It's been every day has been a learning experience. There are going to be challenges. And I think the key message I would say to searchers or aspiring searchers is just persist and persevere, because, you know, you get as much as you put in. And as long as you put in the hard work and you persevere, I'm very sure you will get the outcomes that you're looking out for. Gareth, I know you mentioned this, we are fishing in not a small pond, but ocean of abundance. There are many businesses out there, they are looking for transition and solutions to transition. And so I think it's a good position to be in. And I think with persistence, with perseverance, you would be able to achieve your outcomes.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely a great time to be searching. The numbers should work in your favor as a searcher, but yeah, you have to do the hard miles to your marathon analogy. So, although maybe it's more of an Ironman with you if we're also swimming in a deep sea of opportunities. But anyway, good. Well, I'll call it a day there. Thank you so much for giving us your time and sharing your journey with us today, Nadim. Listeners, if you want to connect with Nadim, please do so on LinkedIn. We'll drop a link to his details in the show notes. And join us again next time for another interview with aspiring and established acquisition entrepreneurs. For now, keep on crunching.